Take care. Watch yourselves closely. These are the recorded words of Moses as he passed on the law to the people of Israel. Take care. Watch yourselves closely. And then Jesus, after him, reiterates this caution. There is nothing, he said, nothing outside of us that by going in can defile or pollute us. But only the things that come out are what pollute us. So take care. Watch yourselves closely. Sometimes the things that come out of me shock me. And I ask myself, self, why is it that you keep repeating the negative patterns of the past when you know another way? When I deeply desire it to be different, and no matter how sincere my heart, my unconscious has a mind of its own. It's like the social laws of antiquity have been imprinted onto my mind. Isn't that the way? Social laws not unlike the ones existing in first century Palestine. Reading Mark's gospel narrative about the conflict between Jesus and the Pharisees, we can be drawn into the story, reading into it the stereotypical action drama categories, the goodies and the baddies. You know, they're both shooting each other down, but we are clear who is good and who is bad. Mark's gospel is written in a time when a new Christian community was being developed between the years of about AD 30 and AD 70. The burgeoning early church was in a process of working out its own relationship to Judaism. These early Christians were Jews, worshiping in synagogues and gathering in their homes, struggling with the Jewish laws in light of the teachings of Jesus. And in this story, Mark embodies this very real dilemma. So the Pharisees are given the characters of those who embody difficult laws. You know, the ones who challenge and the ones who are being challenged by Jesus. Mark also seems to use this narrative as a way to sympathize with these early Christians who were experiencing exclusion. They were often being asked to leave the synagogues because they also followed the teachings of Jesus. So it is no wonder that when we read this text, we find ourselves leaning toward Jesus, the crowd, and the disciples, and cheering them on. Yet, just for a moment, let us suppose that the Pharisees were good people like us, like you and me. Let's suppose they meant well, living out their faith in the way that they knew, desiring to fill their temples, desiring to balance their budgets, desiring to preserve the traditions that meant so much to their community. Let's imagine that the Pharisees were well-intentioned people, completely unaware that the laws of ritual washing and food purification were exclusionary. Let's imagine they had social blind spots. You know, those things obvious to everyone else except to them. And we all have social blind spots. Harvard professor, the social psychologist, Dr. Maharajan Banaji, describes a time in 2013 when she stood before her graduate class and she shared that old 1970s riddle. You know, the one that goes, a father and his son were in a car accident, and the father dies at the scene. The boy, badly injured, is rushed to a local hospital, and in the hospital, the operating surgeon looks at the boy and says, "I cannot operate on this boy. He is my son." How can this be if the father has just died? I have a little note here saying, leave a pause in case the congregation is figuring this out. After all the good work of the feminist movement of our time, more than half of Dr. Manaji's class did not get the right answer, which of course is the surgeon is the boy's mother. Social blind spots. Social laws of antiquity that have been printed into our minds. Do you know that today 80% of the entering class of surgeons are women? And yet our minds are like this computer firewall that prevents us from moving forward, even though our hearts desire it to be different. Archbishop Desmond Tutu describes another example that happened to him. He went to Nigeria when he was working with the World Council of Churches. He was due to fly to the Nigerian city of Jos. So he went to the Lagos airport, got onto the plane, and the two pilots introduced themselves, and it became apparent that they were both black Nigerians. Archbishop Tutu says that he grew a few inches taller. He was so proud. It was fantastic because he had been taught that African black people couldn't do this. He then recounts what happened during the flight. He says, "We had this smooth takeoff, and then we hit the mother and father of all turbulence. I mean, it was scary. It was awful," he says. And then he said, "Do you know, I can't believe it, but the first thought that came to my mind was, there's no white men in the cockpit. Are these blacks going to be able to make it?" And of course, they obviously made it. There is no recorded discrepancy between the competency of a black person flying a plane with any other pilot. A social blind spot. Social laws of antiquity imprinted onto our minds, even though our hearts wish and know that it is different. So in Mark's account, the Pharisees, well-intentioned people like us, with blind spots, were criticizing Jesus' disciples, this new, innovative Jewish group. This time, the issues were about purity codes that defined the welcome and decorum of table fellowship. The Pharisees critiqued the inclusiveness of Jesus' followers' eating habits. You see, by restricting laws of eating, the Pharisees maintained the fence around the Jewish community of this time. This is how they particularly defined who was Jewish and who was not in their understanding. Those who defiled themselves were unclean, and those who were unclean were not allowed to eat at their table. And Jesus disputes their exclusive claim. He actually takes apart the foundation of their claim. He addresses the Pharisees, he addresses the crowd, and then he has to address the disciples separately because Mark's account says they still didn't get it. Three times he relocates the site of purity from the body to the heart, from external things to internal things. The heart, in Jewish thought, is the moral seat of a person. Out of the heart, we act. Out of the heart, we perceive what is ethically right to do, to love God, to love our neighbor, and to love ourselves. There is nothing external that can make us unclean. There is nothing about one's place in society, nationality, gender, dress, or eating habits that makes a person unclean. And if no one is unclean, then all are welcome to the table. All are welcome to this table. And if all are welcome to this table, given the centrality and meaning of the Eucharist, all are welcome to the tables in our homes, in our restaurants, and all the places we gather with friends. Jesus called the crowds then, and Christ calls us now to examine the hidden ways that we may exclude. Take care. Watch yourselves closely. Because like it or not, we are riddled with implicit bias. That is, our conscious minds or our hearts may deeply believe in welcoming all, but the social law that is written on our unconscious minds is suspicious of difference. Next week's gospel even calls into question Jesus' implicit bias. We all have them. And we still exclude people based on the color of the skin, based on gender, height, creed. This is our bias, an age-old bias. And oh, how our hearts wish it were different. And it happens wherever we go, even in Canada. Stats show that most professors at Canadian universities, female or male, me included, are more likely to favor male responders to questions in class. A Ugandan friend sits in a church in Vancouver, and the well-meaning, good-intentioned woman to his left and his right move their purses to the other side. Something that never once happened to me after attending that same church for 2 years. Perhaps that is why Catherine Mowry, in an article called Do Good Fences Make Good Neighbors, she observes that churches provide food distribution, housing, employment programs to reach the stranger, but church continues to struggle at the point of extending community to the stranger. Social blind spots, our unconscious minds that are suspicious of difference. I wonder what we do that we are blind to. Most often, our blind spots can only be seen by those who do not think like us. So it becomes this perpetuating cycle. We implicitly prefer like-minded people, so we gather them around ourselves, our friends, the books we read, the movies we watch. And it is only when we invite people different from ourselves to interact with us regularly that we open up to see differently. And at first, it may feel uncomfortable to be with someone or read a book written by someone from a very different generation or who self-identifies as a gender quite different from our own. Maybe someone from a more conservative Christian tradition. Maybe someone who has a different cultural experience of living in Canada. Or someone who says they are spiritual but not religious. And maybe, just maybe, we could get to the place where this person, now a friend, or this book or that film may tell us what they see. And the stranger becomes Christ to us. Not in a symbolic way, but in a grounded, fleshy kind of way, where the other shows us something about ourselves we could not see before. Something we need to pay attention to on our journey of following the teachings of Jesus. So, take care. Watch yourselves closely. Amen.